Welcome to Tungsten, Bulletproof Hacks for the Moth-Eaten. I'm Christine Bruce, your grandmotherly accomplice for the next half hour. Tungsten broadcasts at the saddest hour on Wet'suwet'en territory through CICK 93.9 FM, stationed in an older-than-the-hills train car in Smithers, BC. Better with age? I think so. We live in an age where it feels like everything is moving too fast. Most of us have a cell phone so we can keep up to date, check work emails, and connect with others immediately. When I go on social media, I often feel oversaturated with news, and especially with bad or frightening news. So, what happens when you slow down a little? Maybe return to a more traditional form of communication, known by the rather derogatory title of snail mail. While letters have been a part of my life since childhood, a year ago, something occurred that recommended this activity big time, and I've never looked back. Let's go get into some letter writing mischief together. Many believe that letters are a lost art form. I'm not talking about love letters here, which are wonderful and almost certainly still in fashion, or business letters that you send as an introduction in search of a job, or even letters to the editor to complain of some offense. Nope, I'm talking about everyday garden variety letters to a friend. I find letters very reassuring. I feel seen and heard, and sending a letter gives me a sense of bringing someone else into that community and making them feel seen and heard. Lots of people benefit in this life hack. I'm going to tell you a story. I have a beloved aunt, my dad's older sister. We were never terribly close, and even today we don't agree on politics, our eating habits are very different, and we don't see each other for years at a time, but we're affectionate. It was all my aunt's doing. My aunt came from a letter-writing family. When I started school and learned to read, I would receive affectionate handwritten letters saying she was proud of me and sending some mundane family news from her part of the province, a 10-hour drive away. She never forgot to send a card on my birthday, and when I got married and started my own family, my aunt always sent me a Christmas card, too. The cards were those five-and-dime store variety with cheesy verses that never failed to make me feel remembered. Her handwriting was elegant and flowing, easy to read, and to reread. She never forgot. And as I got older, when my marriage failed, whenever I'd move to another city or change jobs or locations, the cards and letters would follow me. My aunt once complained in a letter that I was the only correspondent whose address she had to pencil into her address book because it changed so often. I felt both guilty and loved. My aunt is quickly coming up on her 98th birthday. A couple of years ago, she sent one last Christmas card in which the note explained that she was finding this exercise to be too much and that it would be her last year for sending cards. I understood, but of course that didn't mean I had to stop sending cards to her. I'm terrible at remembering birthdays, but I always send her a Christmas card, and I occasionally fire off a typed letter in a pretty card. My handwriting is impossible to read, which means my missives are composed on the computer and then printed off, signed, and inserted into said pretty card. A little more work, but my aunt never forgot me, and I wanted her to understand how much that mattered. In January 2023, my dear aunt fell and broke a bone in her shoulder. She'd had a couple of small strokes previous to that and had declined. In her advanced age, I thought, uh-oh, this is it. She was admitted to hospital where they began searching for a care home. I wrote her a letter right away, hoping it would cheer her up in the hospital. They tell me that when it arrived, my aunt dismissed my cousin and her family, the nurses, and anyone else who had business with her at that moment. She announced, "I have a letter," and she was going to read that letter in privacy. Her reaction suggested to me that she enjoyed getting my letters as much as I've enjoyed getting hers. So I wrote another one, and then another. She insisted on heading home once the bone began to heal, because in her mind, this wasn't it at all. The family continued to search for a care home, assuming the move back home was temporary. And that's when I got the idea. My aunt is well cared for, but she's lost most of her independence. Her lifelong interests of writing letters, composing and performing music, those things were impossible now, but she could still read. so I determined to start writing regular letters so she'd get mail during this in-between period, where she must be feeling at odds with everything. At first, I was writing every week. It was no effort at all, really, to find mundane topics to fill a couple of pages, and I always included pictures within the text, so even if she didn't feel like reading, she could enjoy the pictures, the colors, and the textures. There's something even more newsy in the picture of my grandchildren and the birds at my feeder, after all. Last summer, I took a job where I traveled a lot, so I had to reduce the frequency of letter writing to every other week. In the fall, my cousin, who's the main caregiver, messaged me to say it might be better to send the letters to her home address for the day when a bed in a care home was found. She was certain it was imminent, and my letters might sit in my aunt's mailbox, waiting to be collected for several days if no one was home. I bought a bunch more cards and stamps, and I determined to send personal letters to my aunt every week. I thought, wow, my aunt is bulletproof. Who'd have thought this would continue for so long? Now, I know what you're thinking. How dreadful for me to have to write weekly letters for a whole year. Actually, I look forward to them. My aunt can't write back, and I don't get a lot of news from my cousin on how the letters are received. But she never forgot me, and I love, love, love that now it's my turn to not forget her. Last week, I got this message from my cousin. Hey, Christine, you might just as well send Mom's mail to her home address. She turned down the offer of a room at the nursing home a couple of weeks ago and doesn't plan to live anywhere else forever. She still goes to the mailbox at the front door every day and hopes there is something good there. So please put a smile on her face. Not that she doesn't smile when I bring her a letter from you, but she'd be even more excited to find it herself. Thanks for always thinking about her. When I got this message, I was over the moon excited for this week's letter. It will go into my postbox here in Smithers, sealed with a kiss on the back of the envelope, and it will arrive at her home in southwestern Ontario, where she can collect it herself. Who knows how long this will last? This letter-writing marathon to my bulletproof aunt isn't what's keeping her alive. I have no grandiose notions on that score, but I'm not hurting her chances of hanging around a little longer either. And when I write the letters, there are waves of good energy happening. My kids now get a kick out of sharing news and pictures about my grandchildren, partly so I can add that to the letters. The people at Mills Office Supplies greet me with a chuckle every week when I arrive to print off my letter, and staff at the post office might notice me quietly park my bicycle, pull my letter out of my pack, and kiss the seal before I drop it into the post box. And of course, I get a kick out of the entire process, knowing my aunt will feel loved. This is a wicked life hack. I found a list of reasons to write a letter online. Thank a former teacher for their influence on your life. Delight a child or a youth with mail that has their name on the envelope and a personalized letter inside. Encourage them to write back so they can experience the joy of sending one too. Practice your penmanship, something I wish I might try if my hands weren't getting arthritic. Congratulate someone on an achievement, however big or small. Invite someone over for tea, lunch, or dinner. Encourage a shut-in with news that keeps them plugged into previous activities and people. Share a recipe or a book you enjoyed reading. Let someone know you're thinking of them. Reignite a friendship with a past friend or family member. Surprise someone, just because. One of my aunt's hobbies over the years, as I said earlier, was music, composing and performing it. She particularly liked a cappella music. Here's Helplessly Hoping by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, sung in four-part a cappella harmony by the group Home Free.
Helplessly hoping her harlequin hovers nearby, awaiting a word. Gasping at glimpses of gentle true spirit, he runs. Wish wishing he could fly, only to trip at the sound of goodbye. Wordlessly watching, he waits by the window and wonders at the empty place inside. Heartlessly helping himself to her bad dreams, he worries, did he hear a goodbye? Or even hello?
They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are for each other. Stand by the stairway, you'll see something certain to tell you. Confusion has its cost. Love isn't lying, it's loose in a lady who lingers, saying she is lost and choking on hello.
They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are for each other.
That letter writing has its drawbacks. Stamps and cards are unreasonably expensive, for one thing, and then there's the time commitment, which isn't as awful as I'd expected, but it does exist, I grant you. Still, I started this more traditional sensory overload life hack in Toronto, where everything is too fast and people are indifferent to each other. I wanted to share with you a few that I tried that are not letter writing, but they made me feel immediately better, and that often took strangers completely by surprise. These life hacks were almost invariably greeted with enthusiasm. Now they sound silly, but just try them for yourself. For your own benefit, leave the cell phone at home one day. Go somewhere quiet like the Perimeter Trail and listen to bird songs and animal calls. Sit under a tree for some good company. At night, look up at the stars and the planets. Once you slow down, I bet you'll feel calmer at least. Better still, you can be an exceptional form of encouragement for others, which in turn will make you feel like a pretty nice guy, and we all need that right now. So, as you walk or cycle on the street, greet everyone with a hearty good morning, and I mean not just hi, but the full throttle good morning. It'll really startle people. Make intentional eye contact and smile. Even if they don't respond to you, you've planted a seed. Wear colorful or interesting clothing. I once owned a t-shirt when I worked in the software field that had a picture of a dog whose tail was obviously in heavy wag mode, and the caption on the shirt was, "Instant message." Strangers would giggle as I walked past, and I'd long forgotten I was wearing it. And when you see someone else wearing something neat, make sure to compliment them. The point is, be intentionally friendly with no expectations. You know how everyone gets on an elevator, pushes their floor button, and then looks at the floor? Whenever I knew I'd be heading to a Toronto meeting in a tall building, I'd put on a pair of hand-painted shoes that I owned. The painting was of a big city skyline, and it was pretty whimsical. All I had to do was get on the elevator and wait. Absolutely every person would push their floor button and look down, and then they'd notice the shoes and they'd blurt out, "Great shoes!" and we'd be off having a warm conversation. Being friendly with strangers means no more isolation and feeling down for both them and for you. Thank you.
that means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
A fellow named Charles Osgood has a book out called Funny Letters from Famous People, and here are several excerpts from that book. C.S. Lewis was a professor of English language and literature at Magellan College at Oxford. He'd also published 15 books by the time he wrote this letter in 1944. This one was a letter to his godchild, Sarah. July 16th, 1944. My dear Sarah, thank you very much for sending me the pictures of the fairy king and queen at tea. It must be nice for them, having so many currants in their cake. We don't get very many now, do we? I'm getting to be quite friends with an old rabbit who lives in the wood at Magellan College. I pick leaves off the trees for him because he can't reach up to the branches, and he eats them out of my hand. One day he stood up on his hind legs and put his front paws against me. He was so greedy. So I wrote this about it. A funny old man had a habit of giving a leaf to a rabbit. At first it was shy, but then by and by it got rude and would stand up and grab it. But it's a very nice rabbit all the same. I call him Baron Biscuit. Please tell Mummy I thank her for her nice letter. Lots of love to you and everyone else. Your affectionate godfather, C.S. Lewis. This one was written by Herbert Hoover, the President of the United States, commenting on his earlier days as a surveyor in the High Sierra Nevada. He wrote, "In these long mountain rides over trails and through the brush, I arrived finally at the conclusion that a horse was one of the original mistakes of creation. I felt he was too high off the ground for convenience and safety on mountain trails. He would have been better if he had been given a dozen legs so that he had the smooth and sure pace of a centipede. Furthermore, he should have had scales as protection against flies and a larger water tank like a camel. All these gadgets were known to creation prior to the geological period when the horse was evolved. Why were they not used?" Then there was Dwight D. Eisenhower, another president. In 1942, he wrote a letter to his wife, Mamie, from what he called dreariest wartime London. "Dear Mamie, I'm trying to get me a little dog, Scotty by preference. You can't talk war to a dog, and I'd like to have someone or something to talk to occasionally that doesn't know what the word means. A dog is my only hope." And here's one from Lyndon B. Johnson. After Lady Bird, his wife, had purchased a radio station in Austin, Texas, she spent a lot of time there while Congressman Lyndon Johnson was in Washington. Johnson missed having Lady Bird around with him, and on one occasion he wrote her the following note. "Dearest Lady Bird, if you don't start writing me more often, I'm going to have you drafted into the Women's Auxiliary. Then you'll have to write to your next of kin at least twice a month." Okay, so this one is from Lady Isabel Burton, who is the wife of the intrepid explorer and author Sir Richard Burton. She often found herself in places and situations that few other women of her station had ever endured. In a letter to her mother in 1865, she described one such situation, and I have to say she's a woman after my own heart. "Dear Mother, it was fortunate that I had the foresight to take iron bedsteads along, as already at Lisbon 3-inch cockroaches seethed around the floor of our room. I jumped onto a chair, and Burton growled, 'I suppose you think you look pretty standing on that chair and howling at those innocent creatures?' My reaction was to stop screaming and reflect that he was right. If I had to live in a country full of such creatures, and worse, I had better pull myself together. I got down among them and started lashing out with a slipper. In 2 hours, I had a bag full of 97 and had conquered my queasiness." Lady Isabel Burton, I salute you. I lived in Mexico for a time in a home where cockroaches were big and common. I like this one. In 1900, when Mark Twain lived on West 10th Street in Manhattan, he had occasion to write the following letter to a neighbor. "Dear Madam, I know I ought to respect my duty and perform it, but I am weak and faithless where boys are concerned, and I can't help secretly approving the pretty bad and noisy ones, though I do object to the kind that ring my doorbells. My family try to get me to stop the boys from holding conventions on the front steps, but I basely shirk out of it because I think the boys enjoy it. My wife has been complaining to me this evening about the boys on the front steps, And under compulsion, I have made some promises, but I am very forgetful now that I'm old, and my sense of duty is getting spongy. Yours very truly, S.L. Clemens. Oscar Wilde is one of my favorite playwrights and authors. It could be said that both Oscar Wilde and James Abbott McNeill Whistler hoisted egomania to an art form. In 1883, when Punch magazine described them as gossiping in public about Sarah Bernhardt, Wilde fired off this telegram to Whistler. Punch is too ridiculous. When you and I are together, we never talk about anything but ourselves. Whistler cabled back later that day. No, no, Oscar, you forget. When you and I are together, we never talk about anything except me. George Bernard Shaw and Winston Churchill are also two of my favorites, whose letters I love to read. George Bernard Shaw was well known as a wag. He cabled the following invitation to Sir Winston Churchill. Have reserved 2 tickets for my first night. Come and bring a friend if you have one. G. Shaw. But Churchill was certainly no less witty. His reply was, impossible to come first night. We'll come second if you have one. Churchill. Ah, yes, this one by Isaac Asimov, who is a science fiction author. He wrote an admiring letter to science writer Carl Sagan in December 1974. Dear Carl, I have just finished The Cosmic Connection and love every word of it. You are my idea of a good writer because you have an unmannered style, and when I read what you write, I hear you talking. One more thing about the book made me nervous. It was entirely too obvious that you are smarter than I am. I hate that. In my research, I learned that Edward Gorey, one of my very favorite illustrators, had an ongoing correspondence with a friend of his, where not only were his letters beautifully illustrated, but even the envelopes had remarkable characters and scenes hand-drawn alongside the addresses. Imagine receiving one of those. There are lots of great reasons for writing a letter, apart from the obvious one that you want to connect with someone. I'm going to start with some of the advantages I consider minor, or that in my case don't apply, and move along to those that have become huge for me. The list will likely form a different hierarchy for you, and it might change over time. The thing is, there are so many great advantages to writing a letter. It improves handwriting, which obviously it doesn't do in my case, but it would if you were handwriting them. Letters are personal. Writing a letter reduces stress. It helps me slow down when I'm overwrought or trying to do too much. Letter writing reduces screen time. I follow lots of great projects, but there's a lot of doom and gloom too, and I need a break from it sometimes. It strengthens existing relationships. Whether it's a new relationship or an existing one, letter writing creates and builds a personal connection. There's healing through expression. It really is an art form. It keeps the mind sharp. Letter writing strengthens your language skills. And the reason I chose this life hack today, writing a letter eases feelings of loneliness and isolation. If you, like me, are writing regular letters to someone, then you may get into deeper thinking on some topics. As I said earlier, my aunt and I don't always agree on some basic things like politics, so I try to be tactful. In that instance, letter writing increases clarity and broadens perspectives. It also develops a sense of accomplishment, because if you take some time over it, unlike a text message or a quick email, there is a sense of accomplishment. When you take some time over it, the exercise is good for the brain. In fact, studies have shown that the process of putting words to paper or computer can aid brain cognition and function. And over time, it makes you more creative. There are lots of benefits of receiving letters, too. Letters make us feel valued. Have you considered writing to a shut-in? To someone who's unwell? To someone who's in prison? To a child who might be getting overlooked? It's a great way to be gentle with others and with yourself. It might be the outlet you need to express a difficult emotion or to bridge and heal a gap. Receiving a letter from someone who has lived through a difficult period may be reassuring and offer optimism that they'll get through it. Anyone who feels saturated with screen use might welcome an alternative. Letters are tangible. They're like baking your own bread, working on a puzzle, giving someone a hug, A letter is one of the more remarkable objects that I love to give and receive. Letter writing connects both strangers and loved ones. Letters, even those merely about daily activities, are comforting, and they're usually opened with great enthusiasm. This is Never Gonna Give You Up by the Newfangled Four from Southern California, one of the top barbershop quartets in the world.
Da, 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 da.
Strangers to love, you know the rules, and so do I. All full commitment's what I'm thinking of. You wouldn't get this from any other guy. I just wanna tell you how I'm feeling, girl. I gotta make you understand. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
Baby,
we've known each other for so long. Your heart's been aching, but you're too shy to say it. Yeah,
we both know what's been going on.
We know the game and we're gonna play it.
Baby, if you just ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too
blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you. I'm never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never tell a lie and hurt you.
Never gonna give, never gonna give, never gonna give, never gonna give.
Would you give a dollar, or would you give a hug? But there's one thing I wouldn't give, and that's you up. Would you give a kidney, or would you give a car? And though I know that giving is an essential part of living, the only thing I wouldn't give is you, my love. Never gonna give you up, let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, tell a lie and hurt you. Never gonna give, never gonna give you up. Never gonna give, never gonna give you up.
As I researched this topic of writing letters, I discovered a few tips that might help anyone be better at writing letters. Buy some new stationery. This is a good one. For years, I have visited stationery stores spontaneously and just gone in and bought up a bunch of cards that had good messages or whose picture made me feel something positive. This makes letter writing fun and inviting. Always have stamps and envelopes on hand. No excuses. Keep an address book or a list of frequently used addresses on your computer and keep it up to date. And try to be consistent. As with any habit, it takes repetition and dedication. Feeling better? Me too. You've been listening to Tungsten, Bulletproof Hacks for the Moth-Eaten. Tungsten is produced by Christine Bruce, aired through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Available anytime at smithersradio.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. Let's get into mischief again soon. In case you need a little fix this week, I'll leave you with a few life hacks. Turn off your phone. Call your mom, your dad, your sibling, a friend, someone from high school. Write a letter. Write that letter. Write to someone today.